First Peter chapter 2. Peter's writing from Rome. He writes this letter to both Jewish and Gentile believers in the nation we call Turkey today, but he points out five of the cities in Asia Minor, which is modern Turkey. The year is AD 64. Caesar Nero is beginning to unleash his persecution on Christians back in Rome where Peter is. The believers in Rome are facing torture. They're being burned alive, death by wild animals in the Colosseum. And some of the main themes that we have seen woven, we are going to see, oh my gosh, we aren't even just beginning, woven through the book is that of suffering, submission, which is not what we normally think of as the way to handle it when you are being persecuted. We want to rise up and fight. Peter says, you need to change that. You need to learn what submission is all about. And what we would call relational evangelism. We'll see that big time this morning. Because the way you handle your difficulties, I'd like to see a show of hands of how many people are going through difficult times, but I'm not going to waste your time because I think everybody would put their hands up. I think at some point we all go through difficulties. But the way you handle your difficulties, the way you respond to trouble, is going to affect people around you. And they'll either say, well, he's just an angry guy like the rest of us, or they'll say, oh my, something is different. Last week in chapter 2, Daniel introduced us to a concept of living stones, that we are living stones, being built up into a temple, if you will, a spiritual building. And we will see this idea continue as we pick it up in chapter 2, verse 6, that we are being built into a place that is centered on the worship of God. So chapter 2, verse 6. Therefore, it is also contained in the scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious, and he who believes on him will by no means be put to shame. So we're all living stones. And now he's going to quote roughly from Isaiah 28:16. If you would take the time and turn there, I'm not going to let you. I'm not going to give you that time. But if you turned and looked it up, you would find, well, he's not very good at quoting the Bible. He's kind of off on a few words. And most of that is because he's quoting from the Greek translation of the Old Testament called the Septuagint, which has some different words used. But he is roughly quoting from this. And he talks about God laying in Zion a chief cornerstone that is elect and precious. And he's talking about Jesus. Jesus is more precious, the most important stone in the building. He's the chief cornerstone. He is elect in that he was chosen before time began to be the cornerstone of what God is building. And he's precious. There's nobody more. There's nothing more valuable in the universe than him. And then he says, he who believes in him will by no means be put to shame. Both Isaiah, in Isaiah 28, and Peter are encouraging those who have made a choice of putting their lives into Jesus' hands. Have you made that choice of putting your life in Jesus' hands? Go ahead. Let me see your hands. Have you made that choice of putting your life in his hands? You know what? You don't have to ever be afraid of regretting that choice. You will never be ashamed, never be embarrassed, for especially when you get to heaven, you will be so glad that you did. Absolutely nothing to be embarrassed about. You may find yourself being ridiculed here on this planet. You may find people calling you names, but in the end, you will not be ashamed. Verse 7, therefore, to you who believe, he is precious. But to those who are disobedient, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. Now, he uses two words, believe and disobedient. And in the Greek, both words are pretty much opposites of the word. It's kind of like believe and disbelieve in a way. We could say to you who believe, he is precious, but to those who don't believe, and then he goes on. And then he quotes the stone which the builders rejected. He's going to quote the psalmist. This is from Psalm 118, verse 22, the stone which the builders has rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This is from Psalm 118. Daniel mentioned it last week. There's an old Jewish tradition that we believe this little verse is built upon. It has to do with the building of the Temple of Solomon. In building Solomon's temple, they didn't cut the stones or trim the stones at the construction site. This is freaky for those of you who are in construction. Everything was done off-site. And then everything was transported to the site of the temple, and it was all so exactly done that it all just fit in place. No mortar, no hammers, no nails. It just all fit together. Absolutely incredible, right? They had this incredible plan put together that they would say, this is stone number 53X25, and they would ship it out, and they would pull out their plans and say, okay, that one goes there. And they would do all these stones, one after another. Everything worked out well until one particular stone arrived, and the builders couldn't figure out where it went. So they tossed it aside. They kind of tossed it down the hill. Much later, the builders began to wonder when the quarry was going to send them the most important stone of the building, which is the cornerstone. And they sent back to the quarry, and they said, when are you going to send us the cornerstone? And the quarry said, well, buddies, we sent that a long time ago. And somebody remembered that stone that they had tossed off the hill. And they went and they got it, and there it was. The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. In Luke 20, verse 17, Jesus tells a story in which he connects this to him. He was rejected by his own people, and yet he would become the cornerstone of all that God would be doing on this in this world. And in verse 8, also a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. They stumble being disobedient to the word to which they also were appointed. A stone of stumbling. Now here he's quoting another passage. You know, you kind of get the feeling that Peter knows his Bible. You know, he's just like one boom, 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 right? Daniel knows this because he was studying so hard last week. You get all these passages, all these little references. He knows his Bible. Here he's quoting from Isaiah chapter 8. For those who don't believe Jesus, who reject Jesus, he isn't precious, but he's something that they will trip over and end up on their face. But in verse 7, he said, to you who believe, he is precious. Now, if you're using the app and the notes in the app, you've got a fill-in-the-blank coming in right here. And the fill-in-the-blank is this, believe and follow. And I'll try to tell you how I get there with this. Keep in mind who Peter is writing to and what their lives are like. He's reminding his readers that even Jesus was rejected. The stone which the builders rejected. These people are going to go through persecution. They're going to know what it's like to be rejected. And he's going to tell them in just a few paragraphs, when we get there in a few weeks, in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. He's going to remind us in a few weeks. Actually, he's going to remind us all through the whole book. This is how Jesus handled suffering. This is how Jesus handled persecution. To you who believe, he is precious. You need to believe in Jesus. But if you're going to believe in Jesus, you need to follow his example when you are suffering. He knows what you're going through because he was rejected. He was beaten. He was crucified. So you aren't going to outdo him. You aren't going to say, oh, well, Lord, you don't know nothing about suffering, because nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Nobody knows my sorrow. You know what? I know somebody who way outdoes you in your suffering. on top of the physical suffering, he took on the sins of the entire world on that cross. So you and I would be very well off if we would follow his example in how we suffer. Jesus is the one who said, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. This theme of submission that is woven through the entire book, he will not let up. Some of you have got this idea in your head, well, it's all about wives being submission to your husbands. I hate that word. You know what? Read the book, because submission is for all of us. It was very eye-opening to me a couple weeks ago, coming across this principle. Jesus said this for all of his followers. If you're going to come after him, if you want to follow him, then you have to learn, all of us, men, women, boys, girls, old folk, everybody, we need to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow him. Peter actually lived this. He's writing here in 64 AD, and about 2 or 3 years from now, church history tells us that it was during Nero's reign still as emperor in Rome. Peter had been visiting Rome when he hears that there was a warrant out for his arrest. The believers in the church persuaded Peter to leave the church and flee. This is tradition. This is church. I don't even want to say it's a legend or tradition, but we believe that, supposedly Peter meets Jesus outside of the city. And Jesus is heading back into Rome carrying a cross. And Peter asks him, in the Latin, it's quo vadis, or quo vadis, depending on which school of Latin you learned, which means, where are you going? See, Peter's leaving Rome. He's leaving the persecution, which is not always a bad idea. He's leaving the persecution, and he meets Jesus going into the city carrying his cross. And he says, where are you going? Jesus tells Peter that he's going into the city to be crucified again. You know, Jesus said, if you do that to the least of these, my brethren, you do it unto me. Because the church was under persecution. Peter turned around and went back to the city where he was arrested and condemned to death. And when he's about to be crucified, he says to the guys who are going to kill him, I don't think I'm even worthy to be put to death the way Jesus was. And so they crucified him upside down. So these aren't just vain words that Peter's giving us. He lives this. So if you're going through a difficult time, you are not alone. There's someone who's walked a path ahead of you, and we need to find those footsteps and walk in them. Verse 9, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Now, here we go on this Bible nerd, Peter. He's quoting all kinds of things right from the Bible. He talks about a chosen generation. Isaiah is the one that writes out in Isaiah 43:20 that the Jews were a chosen people. He mentions a royal priesthood and a holy nation. That comes from Moses, that Israel was a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And then he says, you're a special people. I like the old King James myself. It says, you are a peculiar people. You are peculiar. You are a peculiar people. Actually, that gives us the wrong idea. The Greek word for special, peripoiesis, it carries the idea of preserving. And in Hebrews 10:39, it's translated as saving. You are a saved people. He has preserved you, a special people. He says, and there's a reason for all of this, that you may proclaim the praises of him. We'll talk about that in a minute. Verse 10, you who once were not a people, but are now the people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. there's several quotes here, and he's quoting from the book of Hosea. Hosea was that prophet in the Old Testament, kind of towards the end of the Old Testament, who was told to marry a prostitute named Gomer. See, only people of a certain age know this. Golly, Sergeant Carter! Everybody else is going, they're weird in this church. They're weird in this church. And to be honest, I'm not sure which is worse, her profession or her name. You know, a prostitute or Gomer. I mean, who names a girl Gomer? I don't know. In Hosea 1 and 2, this is where this all comes from. Hosea gives some strange names to his kids. He names one daughter Loruhamah, which means no mercy. How'd I growing up being called no mercy? He named a son Lo-Ami, not my people. I'm sure everybody's thinking, well, you mean that's not your son? Who's the father here? Well, he's married to a prostitute, Lo-Ami. Later on, he does change their names to Mercy, Ruhama, and to My People, Ami. Paul quotes Hosea to say that this was actually speaking of the Gentiles. A people who are not my people will become my people. A people who had no mercy, the Gentiles, would receive mercy. Now see that verse 9, if you look at all those things, those were all about Israel. But verse 10 is all about us, all about us pagan, pig dog, heathen Gentiles. See, it's all God's people, all of God's believers. Now let's go back to verse 9. It says, we are to proclaim the praises of him who's brought us out of darkness into his marvelous light. And if you're filling in the blank here, here's the lesson. Speak the right message. Speak the right message. We're supposed to proclaim something. I'm afraid that sometimes us Christians have a reputation. We are known as people who are against everything.
The trustees have a few suggestions they would like to submit to you.
I think you know what the trustees can do with their suggestions. I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. No matter what it is or who commenced it, I'm against it. Your proposition may be good, but let's have one thing understood. Whatever it is, I'm against it. And even when you change it or condense it, I'm against it. I'm opposed to it. On general principles, I'm opposed to it.
He's opposed to it. In fact, indeed, that he's opposed to it.
For months before my son was born, I used to yell from night till morn, whatever it is, I'm against it. And I've kept yelling since I first commenced it. I'm against it.
The message is not what we're against. Do you see what we're supposed to proclaim? The message is not, you tell the world what's wrong with them. You tell the world what we're against. No. If you notice back in verse 9, we're supposed to, it's not about what we're against, but the praises of the one who we're for. That's our message. Jesus is the one who has changed our lives. He has taken us out of darkness into his marvelous light. That's got to be what's coming off of our lips. Some Christians, we make more the focus on ourselves. And, it's all about me, what's happening in my life, instead of what Jesus is all about. They make it sound as if their lives are as super duper as Chuck Norris.
Don't look now. Chuck Norris is right behind you.
I heard some of the heroes read Chuck Norris comics.
I heard at night the boogeyman checks under the bed for Chuck.
I heard Chuck Norris's reflection won't even look him in the eye.
I heard when cops need cops, they call Chuck Norris.
I heard when Chuck gets in the water, sharks get out of the ocean.
I heard when Chuck Norris is hiking, grizzlies look out for him.
I heard Chuck Norris rides the motor without the cycle.
I heard Chuck Norris wears a hat to protect the sun.
I heard medicine takes Chuck Norris to feel better.
I heard what actually killed the dinosaurs was Chuck Norris.
I heard cats say they have Chuck-like reflexes. I think he still got it.
I'll bet you a buck he catches the salt shaker.
You're on.
Hey, Chuck!
You owe me a buck.
You can't always see what's coming, but when you choose United Healthcare, finding an in-network doctor that's
wait
close
for it,
to
wait
home
for
is
it.
Easy.
Heard cats have chuck-like reflexes. Too soon.
Too soon.
United Healthcare.
See, some of us make the point about us. We're not supposed to be talking about us. We're supposed to be talking about Jesus. Jesus. We aren't chosen because we're better than others. We're chosen because we've been shown mercy. We've been shown mercy. We need to be pointing people to Jesus, the one who died on a cross, the one who paid a debt he didn't owe, because we owed a debt we couldn't pay. That's who we talk about. We're people who have received mercy. This is a clip from the 1959 movie Ben-Hur, Charlton Heston. And at this point in the movie, Ben-Hur has been sold into slavery. He's gone from being a wealthy, powerful man to a lowly slave. And he meets a stranger on the road.
Wait! No more for him.
You know who's talking, who's, you know, do you know who's helping him?
You! I said no water for him!
That's our message, friends. We're just slaves who've been helped by God, taken from darkness into his marvelous light. Look at verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the world. As sojourners and pilgrims, that's what he calls us. These words might be familiar to the Jews who are scattered around the world in what we call the dispersion, but Peter has more than that in mind. And the lesson, the fill in the blank, is out of place. None of us believers should be really comfortable in this world. It's okay if you feel uncomfortable from time to time in this world. It's totally okay. Paul writes, Philippians 3:20, "For our citizenship is in heaven, from which we also eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ." Right now, Caleb is traveling through a country that he doesn't belong to. He carries a passport that's from the United States, not the country that he belongs to. He also probably stands out because everybody in the country that he's at, their skin is a different color. So he's experienced what it is to be in a different country. Well, you and I belong to heaven. You should feel a little out of place here in this world. In April 1947, our nation was filled with racism. Jackie Robinson was the first man to break the color line when he began to play for the Brooklyn Dodgers. He was every bit out of place in white baseball. Some teams threatened to boycott their games with the Dodgers. In some cities, he wasn't allowed to stay at the same hotel as the rest of his teammates. And while he faced horrendous racism, he knew that he represented a whole lot of people, and he was careful how he responded. This is from the movie 42.
They call him country, swallows hitless in four trips. Primer Casey in his second inning for lead. This game is just as tight as a new pair of shoes on a rainy day. Casey goes into his windup. Florida hits a hard ground ball right at Reese, who fires it over to Jack at first. Robinson is down. Florida spikes him high up on the leg, and he is down.
Damn it, Slaughter! You know what you're doing? You're
fighting
my guy!
Yeah, Jack. Damn, little boy's getting
off. Just stay out. The T-Doc will be right out. Give
him.
Next guy up, you hit him right in the head, all right?
No.
Give me up.
No.
Give me up! Just get him out. Just get him out. Understand? Game's too important. Just get him out. Play ball.
You a tough man, Jack.
Let's get him out.
See, we need to be careful how we respond to those who are trying to take advantage of us. We may be tempted to respond in anger, but people are watching us. People are watching us. He says we should abstain from the fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. For believers, this is a critical issue. These fleshly lusts. We need to abstain from these things. Now, many of us in this room, fleshly lusts, we immediately jump in our heads to sexual things. That's part of it, but there's a whole lot more involved. Galatians 5:19 says, when you follow the desires of your sinful nature, that's fleshly lusts, the results are very clear. Sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, idolatry, sorcery, which could be translated drugs, hostility, that's fleshly lusts, quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, wild parties, and other sins like these. See, we need to step back from all those kinds of things if we are in these situations. Verse 12, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. New Living Translation says this, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God when he judges the world. Now in our text, New King James mentioned glorifying God in the day of visitation. What's the day of visitation? It may be the day when Jesus returns. When he visits us, it may be the day when that person finds themselves face to face with God. And the question is, will they have turned towards God because of your example? Because of my example? Or will my example have turned them away from God? He says in verse 12, we should have our conduct honorable. This is the last point. Last fill in the blank is this. Your response speaks loudly. Your response, your actions really, speaks loudly, people will say all kinds of stuff against us. It may be because of their wrong impression of Christianity. It may be that Satan has stirred them up and they're just being used by Satan. Hopefully it's not because you're really a jerk. All those Christians, they're just take advantage of people because you're taking advantage of people. Hopefully that's not the case. How you respond is everything. When Jackie Robinson was brought up to play in the major leagues, he was brought up by Branch Rickey, and he was warned about how his conduct would affect the future of baseball for all African Americans. His conduct, everybody was going to be watching his conduct.
People aren't going to like this. They're going to do anything to get you to react. Echo a curse with a curse, and they'll hear only yours. Follow a blow with a blow, and they'll say, the Negro lost his temper. Your enemy will be out in force, and you cannot meet him on his own low ground. We win with it. Hit it. Run it. Feel it. Only that. We win if the world is convinced of two things. That you are a fine gentleman and a great baseball player.
We only win if people are convinced that you are a fine gentleman and a great baseball player. Remember that our letter is written to a suffering people, and some of us are going through difficulties. People will pay attention. A fine gentleman and a great baseball player. We're going to be seeing many lessons through 1 Peter on how we should conduct ourselves when life is hard. Let me just give you one little peek of one of them, and this is what we'll end on. 1 Peter 4:19, therefore let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to Him in doing good as to a faithful Creator.